U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, in a surprise visit to Iraq, warned third parties against making moves to widen the Israel-Hamas war.
To anyone who might seek to take advantage of the conflict in Gaza to threaten our personnel here or anywhere else in the region, don't do it.
Plus, Israeli warplanes struck a refugee camp in the central Gaza Strip, killing dozens, according to local officials.
Explosions and columns of smoke billow over the Gaza Strip skyline.
And a U.S. official says CIA Director William Burns will be visiting several countries in the Middle East. Today is Monday, November 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Rick Pantaleo. Although disagreements with Arab leaders over a ceasefire in Gaza continue, the United States is advocating for a humanitarian pause. However, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu reiterated Sunday that without the return of hostages taken by Hamas militants, no ceasefire will happen. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the details.
During an unannounced visit to Iraq, Secretary of State Antony Blinken issued a warning to third parties against moves to widen the Israeli-Hamas war.
To anyone who might seek to take advantage of the conflict in Gaza to threaten our personnel here or anywhere else in the region, don't do it.
The United States' commitment to the delivery of humanitarian assistance to Gaza and the support for a two-state solution were also among the topics that Blinken said he discussed during a meeting earlier Sunday with Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas in the West Bank. Blinken also met over the weekend with Arab foreign ministers. He explained to them that the U.S. doesn't support an immediate ceasefire in Israel's war against Hamas because it will allow the U.S.-designated terror group to regroup. Deputy National Security Advisor John Feiner elaborated on the matter on ABC's This Week show.
Although we have made clear that we would support and are advocating for humanitarian pauses to allow humanitarian aid to be distributed to potentially facilitate the release of more hostages.
But a ceasefire won't be declared until the militant group Hamas returns the hostages it kidnapped during its October 7 terror attack, stressed Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu while visiting an Israeli Air Force base. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who appeared on NBC's Meet the Press, noted he'd travel to Israel if conditions allow to facilitate the return of stranded Ukrainians. He was also asked if he believes Israel is following the laws of war.
If terrorists are attacking, if terrorists attack, if they behead children, you have full right to defend people and defend your own country, state. If we can open humanitarian corridors, take away prisoners of war, help people who are not involved there, the whole world should do this.
His remarks came as the World Food Program chief, Cindy McCain, warned again that food supplies are running out in Gaza and that the crisis threatens regional peace and stability. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Israeli warplanes struck a refugee camp in the central Gaza Strip, killing dozens, according to local officials, as diplomatic efforts continue for a humanitarian pause. Associated Press correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Israeli warplanes struck a refugee camp in the central Gaza Strip, killing dozens, according to local officials, as the diplomatic efforts continue for a humanitarian pause. Explosions and columns of smoke billow over the Gaza Strip skyline after Israeli warplanes struck the Maghazi refugee camp. This man calls it a massacre. And Palestinian officials say at least 40 people were killed. Israel said it will press on with its crackdown against Hamas leadership, while U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken met with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas in Ramallah. The two men shaking hands publicly, holding talks privately. Saturday, Blinken said he cannot support a ceasefire because it will only empower Hamas.
Senior Hamas officials said that it was their intent do October 7th again and again and again.
Blinken's meetings with Arab leaders continue through the weekend. President Biden suggested progress is being made on a humanitarian pause, answering yes when asked by reporters. I'm Jackie Quinn.
According to a U.S. official, CIA Director William Burns will be visiting several countries in the Middle East. Burns will meet with multiple intelligence counterparts and country leaders, the official told VOA. The focus of the trip includes the situation in Gaza, support for hostage negotiations, and continued deterrence to prevent Israel-Hamas conflict from growing. The official added that the director will reinforce our commitment to intelligence cooperation, especially in areas such as counterterrorism and security. To get an update on the Israel-Hamas war, I spoke with correspondent Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem. Linda, there are reports indicating that Israeli warplanes have hit refugee camps in Gaza. What can you tell us about this?
Yes, there were two refugee camps hit early today in the center of Gaza, which is actually below the line that Israel had said people should flee to. The Palestinian Health Ministry, which is affiliated with Hamas, and so we have to be, you know, a little bit careful in terms of numbers, says that at least 53 Palestinians were killed, including children. Israel says it is doing everything it can to avoid civilian casualties and opened a corridor for Palestinian civilians to move from the north of Gaza to the south of Gaza. And there are still an estimated 300,000 Palestinians who are in the north of Gaza.
Linda, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu reiterated Sunday that without the return of hostages, there will be no ceasefire.
Well, Israel says that as long as 240 Israeli hostages are held in Gaza, they will not agree to any kind of a ceasefire, and that is also a humanitarian issue. Israel is allowing humanitarian aid into Gaza, but it's not enough, although in the last couple of days, the amount has increased to something like 100 trucks a day. However, Israel has said it will not allow fuel into Gaza because fuel could be used for rockets or for tunnels or that Hamas is believed to be hiding in. So, Israel, I think, also feels President Biden had called for a humanitarian pause to allow humanitarian aid in. But I think Israel feels that if they, agree to a humanitarian pause, it'll be much more difficult to start attacking again. Israeli troops right now are pretty much surrounding Gaza City. That's believed to be where most of Hamas is hiding, in underground tunnels, and Israel says that there's a big Hamas base underneath the main hospital. So there is concern that the death toll is going to go up significantly, and it's going to spark very heavy fighting in the next, few days.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken visited with Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. Can you fill us in on what was discussed? And I believe that the Secretary of State talked about stressing the U.S. commitment to easing suffering of Gaza's civilians.
Yes. So, the Palestinians are divided into two separate groups. Mahmoud Abbas is the head of Fatah, which controls parts of the West Bank, and then Hamas controls parts of Gaza. And in between Gaza and the West Bank, by the way, is Israel. There's no territorial continuity. But Secretary Blinken told Abbas that Palestinians must not be displaced from where they're living. There, Israel has raised some ideas that perhaps civilians could be housed at least temporarily in Egypt, given the vast destruction in Gaza. However, there was no joint statement with Abbas and Blinken, leading to at least speculation that there were some disagreements. The United States has said that Israel has to start thinking about what happens after the war ends and after Hamas is destroyed, which is what Israel says it intends to do. And one of the ideas that's been raised has been that the Palestinian Authority, which Abbas heads, would take over Gaza as well, perhaps with some international help. But again, that's at this point pretty far in the future.
That was VOA correspondent Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem. We're following these other stories from around the world. Turkish police used tear gas and water cannons as hundreds of people at a pro-Palestinian rally Sunday tried to storm an airbase that houses U.S. troops, hours before U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken was due in Ankara for talks on Gaza. Since Bangladesh police broke up a major rally in the capital a week ago, officers have arrested nearly 8,000 opposition figures in a nationwide crackdown, according to a report issued Sunday. The sweeping wave of detentions comes ahead of a general election due in January. And a radio anchor has been fatally shot by a man inside his southern Philippine station in a brazen attack that was witnessed by people watching the program live on Facebook. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Rick Pantaleo. The European Union Commission proposed another $53 billion in aid for Ukraine. The announcement comes as Ukraine's military readies for another winter at war with Russia, and Ukrainians brace for another season of cold temperatures and possible Russian attacks on the power grid. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Firefighters battle a blaze after what Ukraine described as a Russian drone attack on the city of Kharkiv. No word on casualties. Ukraine says this strike was part of a massive drone campaign early Friday hitting critical infrastructure in the country's south and west. A chilling reminder of last year's attacks as winter approaches and temperatures drop. Russia's drone campaign followed a video released Thursday by Ukraine claiming to show Ukrainian forces deploying drones of their own against advancing Russian armored vehicles. VOA cannot independently verify the location or date of the video. Ukraine says the drone strikes were near the city of Avdiivka in the Donetsk region. The pre-war population of 30,000 dropped to about 1,500 today. And as Russian forces moved to encircle Avdiivka, Ukraine's regional police released video of officers evacuating the last civilians from nearby towns. They captured an exchange between an elderly mother and her son in which he tells her to leave and there's no water, no bread, nothing. The woman responds, "Leave me alone." Ukraine's leadership and military continue pushing for more sustained international support and advanced weaponry. Ukraine further seeks EU and NATO membership. It was amid this backdrop that European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen visited the capital Kyiv for a joint news conference with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Von der Leyen said the Commission would recommend another $53 billion in aid from EU member states to Ukraine. Just days earlier in Berlin, EU foreign ministers met to discuss future expansion of the bloc. Germany's Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock expressed confidence that Ukraine would gain membership after a vote in December, adding, "We want to see Ukraine a member of our European Union."
Насипай!
Back on the front lines in Ukraine's Donetsk region, soldiers staffing artillery say they've noticed an uptick in Russian artillery use over the last month, something the South Korean intelligence service blames on its northern neighbor after alleging Pyongyang provided Moscow with more than a million shells. It's all adding up to a situation wearing down on soldiers and civilians alike. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky speaking Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press.
A lot of people, of course, in the world are tired. Of course, it's understandable. Somebody tired on the battlefield, somebody tired on their works, and somebody tired abroad. They want to come back home to their husbands, to their soldiers, to these guys, women and children. Somebody tired from European leaders to support Ukraine. Yes, of course, because long war.
For soldiers like those serving in the 67th Mechanized Brigade, who report 20-hour-long firefights with very little rest between, that long war hits home. And diplomatic reinforcements, albeit potentially around the corner when the EU votes on Ukraine's accession in mid-December, aren't coming fast enough. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
The annual summit of the African Growth and Opportunity Act, a program that has provided eligible sub-Saharan African countries with duty-free access to the U.S. economy since 2000, wrapped up in South Africa on Saturday. U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai sat down with several reporters Saturday, including VOA's Kate Bartlett, to answer questions about AGOA's future.
Thanks, Ambassador Tai. I'm Kate Bartlett. I'm from Voice of America.
And I wanted to ask you, China is Africa's largest trade partner. How can the U.S. compete, and how do the two countries' approaches to trade with Africa differ?
Let me start then with what the basis for our relationship is, which is that the U.S. partnership with the countries of Africa is inherently valuable vis-a-vis ourselves, first and foremost. Our historical ties, our people-to-people ties, the fact that the United States grew out of our own colonial past. There are so many points of shared cultural, historical narrative. That is the cornerstone of our partnership. By the year 2050, 1 in 4 human beings on this planet will be African. Then you look at the median age of the population in Africa, and you compare it to the median age in different places, and you realize that the future is Africa. The potential, human potential, the economic potential of Africa, that is another reason why we know that charting our own path for the future necessarily involves partnership with Africa. So there is the reason why we are here. Separately, let me turn to your question on China. Yes, China's footprint in the global economy in terms of trade is enormous. We know that. That is true in many of our conversations around the world. We feel very strongly that the type of partnership the United States brings and can bring is inherently different from what other partners bring, and that is why we are focused on enhancing and building on a U.S. partnership with Africa.
Yesterday, an African country I will not name told me we don't want the Western democracy imposed to Africa. We want our own African democracy. How do you cope with this hot issue?
Obviously, there's not just one form of democracy. We all have our versions of democracy, but broadly speaking, I think when we talk about democracy, you break it down. It's about a system of government where the people have the right and the power to select their government. I don't think that AGOA dictates the specific kind of democracy. I think the way that I have phrased it is, AGOA is set up to support African solutions to the political and economic reforms that AGOA is meant to encourage.
That was U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai talking with several reporters, including VOA's Kate Bartlett. U.S. President Joe Biden hosted leaders from Latin America, the Caribbean, and Canada for the inaugural America's Partnership for Economic Prosperity Leaders Summit on Friday, with the aim of enhancing economic ties, fortifying U.S. investments in the region, and tackling immigration challenges. Veronica Villafañe narrates this report by Paula Diaz.
President Joe Biden welcomed leaders from Barbados, Canada, Colombia, Costa Rica, Chile, Ecuador, Mexico, Panama, Peru, Dominican Republic, and Uruguay to the White House. They were in Washington for the first ever America's Partnership for Economic Prosperity Leaders Summit. The meeting comes amid a global agenda dominated by the Israel-Hamas conflict in Gaza and the Ukraine-Russia war, but with a set of different challenges in the Americas.
We're affirming our region-wide approach to sharing responsibility for managing the challenges of unprecedented migration flows.
Biden spoke of new economic tools that, along with the Inter-American Development Bank and private donors, could help migrant-hosting countries in the Western Hemisphere.
As part of that commitment, the United States and Canada and Spain are contributing to the Inter-American Development Bank's migration grant facility to help countries that are providing migrants with legal status, supporting the critical services necessary for communities to live in safety, and maybe most importantly, with dignity. Second thing we're doing, expanding legal pathways to promote safe and orderly migration, providing worker permits to allow migrants to contribute to our economy. This is a critical asset and to all of our countries.
Following the meeting, Colombia President Gustavo Petro highlighted a key point of discussion, the issue of decarbonization and Latin America's vast potential in clean energy. He stressed the substantial contribution it could make to the planet's sustainability and its role in helping the United States with its energy transition. When asked about the Israel-Hamas conflict, he said he had expressed his concerns.
It was not the focus of the meeting, but I brought it up. I told President Biden that the breakdown of international law that we're seeing today produces more violence, more barbarism, and destruction of democracy.
President Petro, as well as Chilean President Gabriel Boric, have recalled their ambassadors from Israel for consultations about the situation. The leaders present at the meeting stressed the importance of including other Latin American countries in future summits. For Paula Diaz in Washington, Veronica Villafañe, VOA News.
Former President Donald Trump is set to testify Monday at his New York civil fraud trial, taking the stand in a deeply personal matter that is central to his image as a successful businessman and threatens to cost him control of marquee properties, such as Trump Tower. His highly anticipated testimony in the trial of New York Attorney General Letitia James' lawsuit follows that of his eldest sons, Trump Organization executives Eric and Donald Trump Jr., who testified last week. His eldest daughter, Ivanka, is set to testify on Wednesday. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. Until next time, this is Rick Pantaleo wishing you good luck, good health, and good news tomorrow.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Russia's unjustified attack on its smaller neighbor Ukraine had repercussions across the world, not just because of the nature of Russia's attack against a peaceful neighbor, but because it exacerbated a global food security crisis in a world already reeling from the enduring impacts of COVID-19, climate change, and protracted regional conflicts, said USAID Feed the Future Deputy Coordinator Dina Esposito. This war between two major exporters of food, fertilizer, and fossil fuels exposed the over-reliance on a handful of exporting countries to feed the world, as well as the extreme vulnerability of certain net food importer nations, said Deputy Coordinator Esposito. The U.S. government's response has mirrored the two sides of the conflict. On the one hand, we are providing unprecedented assistance and support to the people of Ukraine, while also stepping up to mitigate the food security impacts of high food and fertilizer prices, especially in vulnerable countries. Among the hardest hit are food insecure countries in Africa, said Deputy Coordinator Esposito. Through both food assistance and Feed the Future partnerships, USAID was well placed to respond to the war's knock-on effects on hunger and malnutrition in countries deeply affected by food and fertilizer prices. We've surged support to ensure millions of farmers have access to improved seeds, fertilizer, proven production practices, and financing to help offset historically high prices for many inputs. We've helped keep small and medium enterprises, so vital to the agricultural economy, up and running. And we've improved access to safety nets and nutrition services for vulnerable women and children. As well, USAID is working to expand local and regional agricultural production and markets. The U.S. is providing technical support to regional institutions to help the continent realize the African Continental Free Trade Area, said Ms. Esposito. We are also working directly with African nations and in partnership with many African universities and think tanks to help countries create more efficient and effective policy and regulatory regimes that will facilitate larger regional markets and fuel both private sector investments and more strategic government investments in areas like research, extension services, and infrastructure. Russia's invasion of Ukraine was a huge shock to food systems around the world, said Deputy Coordinator Esposito. While the global hunger picture is indeed challenging to say the least, there's also a strong undercurrent of vibrancy and possibility in these very same places that are often categorized as hungry.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.